Welcome to the SCORE Innovation Podcast. As one of the world's largest reinsurers, SCORE provides insurance companies with diverse and innovative solutions focused on the art and science of risk. The SCORE Innovation Podcast channel sheds light on evolving consumer needs in life and health and property and casualty reinsurance and connects them to global ecosystems. You can subscribe to the channel on your favorite podcast platform to get notified of all our new exciting content.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Life and Health edition of SCORE's Innovation Podcast. I'm Al Mealy, Global Agile Coach and former Head of Underwriting Innovation in the U.S. Life Market. I'm hosting today's episode, and I'm honored to be here today with Angela Volduk, Principal and Managing Director at Milliman and Telescript. Angela, would you mind introducing yourself to our audience?
Sure. Thank you so much for inviting me. I am Angela Volduk. As Al said, I am a principal and managing director for our IntelliScript division of Milliman. I have two other partners that help me run the business. My responsibilities include operations, IT, data sources, partners, which is why I'm excited to working closely with Al, and also people and talent management and engagement.
Thanks. And you and I have been in the innovation space in the U.S. life market maybe longer than either of us would care to admit. And I've had the good fortune to be crossing your path frequently along this journey. How has your organization maintained an innovative mindset over a lengthy time frame?
Yeah, I really think it's part of Milliman's DNA. It's one of our core values is innovation and entrepreneurship. It's a really unique corporate structure where we get to be privately held. So we're kind of a small business inside of a bigger corporation. And it really allows us to be long-term focused and invest in things that make sense. We also try to hire people that are energized by that. As you know, our whole careers have been trying to automate insurance and bring efficiencies and new ways to the market so we can get more insurance to more people. And I think that one of the things that we do is really just keep not only saying that, but walking that walk. You know, we created prescription histories in 2001 and it's been a really exciting journey, but you can't just be done with that. You know, you have to try to find what's next. What other data could we bring in? How else could we interpret it? How could we help workflows be improved? What type of, again, partnerships and things can we do to connect the dots to make things more efficient? And so to me, innovation sometimes is intimidating because it can be like, oh, I have to invent the next big product or the next big company. But to me, it's how do I write a more efficient email? Can make innovation on a much more tangible, smaller, everyday scale. And I think when you get that, it's just like with anything else, it's muscle memory. You start to just get really comfortable with iterating and constantly improving and having that growth mindset.
Yeah, that's a great point to remember that innovation doesn't just have to be amazing large things. It can be really effective small things as well. So you mentioned that you're always looking out for what's next. What is next for you?
Yeah. So one of the things that we're excited about is trying to continue to add data for prescription histories and medical claims. But we've been talking about the holy grail of electronic health records and how that's going to really be where it's at. And so Milliman's been kind of watching from the sidelines for a while. But in the last year, we really, you know, added some more partnership and did an acquisition with OneRecord to really try to bring our own version of electronic aggregation of the full medical records. And more importantly, interpretation and trying to tie it to the other pieces of information on an applicant. So we're pretty excited about IRCHR.
Yeah, it's really exciting. We've been hearing in the industry for a long time about it, and now it's here. So that's great. You mentioned at the opening that you're able to have a long-term focus on innovation. How do you keep short-term distractions from distracting you from long-term vision?
Yeah, I think it's a discipline of picking your head up and prioritization. You need to make progress. The long-term focus allows you to invest in something that might not, you know, bring revenue today, but you know it's the right thing for your clients and your markets and your company long-term. And then just always prioritizing how to have that right mix of making sure you do have revenue today, because you gotta keep the lights on, making sure you don't lose focus on what has gotten you here. So always investing in the clients, always investing in what you already have, but just that balancing act. And I think it's just that picking your head up, like I said, and prioritization and really just trying to make sure you're making progress in all the ways.
Great. Describe a little bit your prioritization process, if you don't mind. I'm always intrigued by that as an Agile coach in my current responsibilities.
Yeah, that is something I am still learning. I think we have been very informal about it for a lot of my career, but I do think adding the agile framework and having our PI planning sessions, and it really does a forced alignment and prioritization across everyone. You know, I think you can kind of do your own gut check every morning when you're looking at your to-do list and try to figure, okay, how do I tackle this day in the best way possible for me? But then making sure you're doing that more globally across the department, across the company, across the market. I think that's something I've been really excited about with adding SAFE to the Milliman process, because it's been giving us that more intentionality. So I think we were doing it, but this is just more organized. It's more documented, so then you can kind of share the information across teams better. I've always believed in prioritization, but I think I'm still growing my skills in it.
Great to hear. Do you ever find yourself in the position of having to say no or not now to some things that you'd love to have time for, but aren't at the top of the prioritization list?
Yes. And I think that's why I'm still growing, because it's naturally uncomfortable for me to say no, personally and professionally, right? But it's so important, because you can't do everything. You can't be everything to everyone. You have to try to figure out how to do as much as you possibly can, but still do it well and still do it in a way that's meaningful for you as well as the people you're trying to serve.
Now, I know in the time that I've been a partner with Milliman and Telescript, the team size has grown dramatically.
Yeah.
How do you keep an environment in which every member of the team knows that their voice is valued and that their input is desired, the innovations at every level?
Yeah, it's harder, right? Because there's more people. When I first joined, there were six of us. We could just sit around a table and everybody talked. So that's how it happened organically. We're now, you know, hundreds of people and remote. You know, I was one of the few remote people when we first started. And now between COVID and just trying to find talent all over, we're all spread out all over the country. So it doesn't happen as organically as you would like. So you, again, coming back to that intentionality, one of the things that we do is we really make sure in the onboarding that we say that, we try to give examples of that. We try to set, you know, cross collaboration meetings so people can introduce themselves across teams. You know, we really like to make sure that they have access to all of us as the managing directors, because, you know, there's no task too big, too small. Every role is super important. And we hire people because we want their skill set. You know, we know that people are better than us at what they do. And so we want them to bring their own vision, their own expertise, their outside perspective. I've grown up here, right? So this is what I know. I want to hear what's going on from the other places. And so I think literally asking for their voice is a way that we keep that going. And then we really are able to hire people that we can see would be collaborative too. If somebody comes and asks them a question or has a thought, people will actually listen. And so I think being able to perpetuate that through kind of expecting it, demonstrating it, and then facilitating it.
I think hiring is probably an area where I myself still have growing to do. How do you interview for a collaborative mindset?
It's a great question. I think it looks different for different people. You can't have a one size fits all. I'm a very outgoing people person, love to talk, but just because somebody might be more introverted or quiet doesn't mean they're not collaborative. So we have an amazing people team that are, you know, experienced recruiters. So, you know, they have certain competencies that they're looking for. And they are trained too in knowing how those competencies can be demonstrated in different ways so that you're not just getting the same person hundreds of times, because you really do want that diversity of skill set, diversity of thought, and diversity of experience. So I think our recruiters do a great job finding the competencies in different ways in different places. And then we have a top grading process where we can ask some questions and also, again, have people give us examples. Like it's really about that. Don't just say it. Like, what are you doing? Like, how do you do that? And again, it doesn't have to look one certain way, but you do have to show that you're not just going to be in a bubble somewhere off on your own. There's got to be some tether back to us.
Yeah, that's great. You mentioned diversity of mindset, diversity of experience, and wanting to make sure that you have diverse teams contributing. What do you do to make sure that everyone feels comfortable contributing in a diverse organization?
Yeah, that psychological safety is kind of a primary need, right? For all humans in all places. But I think it's really that accountability of if something has a friction point and it's not a constructive conflict, because again, you want people to be challenging each other's ideas, but if it gets into a spot where it feels like it's not productive, then you need to have that accountability to coach the people on the team, the managers, the individuals. And then we actually do pulse surveys. How are you feeling? Do you feel like you have a voice? Do you feel like you can challenge? And if we see scores that are lower in certain areas, then we try to dig into why, and again, do some coaching and things like that. Because if people feel like it's okay to challenge. And we'll even stand up in front of the company with our three partners and we'll have debates with ourselves, or we'll invite kind of the constructive conflict. So just showing that, hey, we're not just saying this. Like, I don't even know what I don't know. So please tell me, please challenge me. And so I think when you're inviting it, and when they can see that there are actually actions taken from some of that, and there's shifts in people's strategy or implementation of what the project plan is, it's like, oh, they actually mean it. They don't just say it to say it. And so I think walking that walk is important.
The concept of constructive conflict is a really important one. Some people misinterpret psychological safety as conflict avoidance.
Yes.
And that's not it at all. I think my own exposure to the concept of a few years ago really changed the way that I thought about it. Has it always been natural within your organization, or was there a sort of a similar light bulb moment where you realized, oh, we need to do something to cultivate this constructive conflict?
You know, I think it's more natural for people. I wouldn't say organizations. I think is hard because you have so many different types of people there. I would say I'm a natural people person. I feel like I like to naturally create psychological safety, but then I might be more of a people pleaser. So my conflict piece needed to be grown. Other people at our company that are really thrive on that debate and like, let's figure this out. And knowing that if we have all the perspectives, we're going to end up with a better result. And so I think kind of growing this company together over the years, we've been able to do that. It takes intentionality. It takes practice. It takes reminders. I do think, again, being remote, it's harder to do in some ways because it's easier to just be like, I'm on a Zoom call with 50 people. So I won't say something. Or if you're in the room, you might be able to see somebody kind of squirming or like wanting to say something, but then you can kind of bring them out and help facilitate it. So we're trying to find those ways. Like with our PI planning, for example, we bring in over 100 people in the room so we can really see that engagement and really give the different pockets for that to happen and reward it when it does and point out, be like, hey, listen, if we had just done this one kind of vacuum perspective, we wouldn't be as far. Now, because we had that challenge, we were able to uncover roadblocks ahead of time and make a better plan. And now we're better off for it and celebrating that too. So it kind of rewards the discomfort that might come with it when it's not 100% natural.
That's great. What a great environment to work in where people are credited with their productive challenging of ideas and you understand the benefit that it brings.
Yeah.
If you were to give advice to a leader in another organization that's trying to create an innovative, high-performance environment, what might that advice look like?
I'm still learning all those things too. I would say things that I feel excited about are knowing that it does take intentionality. It doesn't just happen. Knowing that it means different things to different people. And so supporting that, just like I said, with innovation, it could be the big idea or the small idea, but they're all innovation and you need to acknowledge it and grow it and farm it. People are our biggest assets at any company because we can't do anything. We don't have the right people. And even if we have the right people, if we're not taking care of them, they're not going to be as productive. They're not going to be flourishing. So I think the high performance comes in when you give that trust, that respect, that appreciation with accountability. You want to know, like, is this working? How do we set you up for success? If it's not working, let's know that soon so we can try to adjust and figure this out. And if there's something that company's growing to a point where you no longer are interested in using your competencies in that way, then that's okay too. But let's just acknowledge it and talk about it. So I think being able to not have a fear-based culture, but still an accountability culture really gives that high performance. And again, it rewards the innovation because everybody's firing on all cylinders without roadblocks. But that sounds so easy and so utopian. It doesn't just happen and it's not perfect. So I think embracing the perfectly imperfect and really just leaning into your people and knowing who they are, knowing what you're expecting of them, knowing what they're doing, knowing how that diversity of thought and skills represents the different competencies so you can use it, celebrate it, and grow it. To me, that's how we're trying to keep doing it. And I think we've seen some really amazing things from our amazing team.
Yeah, I love the idea of a culture of trust and accountability. How would you describe your organization's ability to learn from mistakes or failure?
The fail fast is kind of a big thing. We actually did a team meeting where we celebrated the graveyard, you know, all the things that didn't work out. And that's a good thing, right? Because you need new ideas. You have to try through. You're never going to be, you know, the sports metaphor of batting 1,000 with all your new ideas. So I think it's been reminding people that it's okay to try that. And if something, you have a bug in the system and you need to roll back a code, or if you have something out there, that's part of the process, but you sure better catch it fast and you better have a great way to remediate it. And if you have a project that you think is really exciting, never going to generate revenue and it's taking up a ton of resources, well, don't go 5 years just letting that flounder. You know, give it a chance. Don't call it in a month, but have some success criteria, have some definitions of the different, like, is this, you know, go, no go? Is this still working? Is this not working? Does it need more? Is it time to call it? So I think, you know, those framework, the accountability comes back to mind. And again, reminding people that this is all part of the process. If you're not making mistakes, you're not probably trying hard enough. You're in a very safe little bubble.
Yeah, that's great innovative mindset that you've got there. Drawing close to the end of our time, and maybe I'll ask one last question. What are you really excited about in the short-term future of innovation in the insurance space in particular?
You know, it's been really fun having my entire career here with life insurance, and first joined the industry, it was pretty static, pretty traditional, pretty slow moving market. And seeing the innovation across the industry out of necessity, probably, but I'm excited that we actually can do some of the things we've been talking about for 20 years. You know, we're seeing automation, we're seeing real big amounts of data flowing around, we're seeing getting the right price for the right person, not just because they're an age and gender, but because of their specific characteristics. I'm excited that, again, I love doing, I don't just love talking. And so I'm seeing the industry do that now too, which is exciting. And that's inspiring innovations because we want to keep being able to be a great partner and facilitate the innovation of the industry so that we can all keep on keeping on and making this better and better.
Yeah, exciting times. And it's definitely good to see all the fruits of the labor over the last 20 years or so really coming to the light.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for this conversation. It's been really fun having a chance to chat and catch up.
Absolutely. Thanks for being on.
Thank you for listening to us today. You can subscribe to the Score Innovation Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite platform, and be our first listener to new releases. Stay tuned and see you at the next episode.